Hi, I'm Shadow Stevens. While I'm doing this and that and the other thing at the very same time, I'm having a great time on The Jeremiah Show, the greatest show in the history of the world. For the love of God, subscribe. No, seriously, subscribe.
It's The Jeremiah Show. Tearing back the curtain on the hospitality, music, and entertainment industry with insider tips and the hottest global guests in the biz. With Dr. D and special LA personal development commentator Mike Gormley. He's a restaurant and bar fixture, a partner with legendary rock star drummer Mick Fleetwood in Fleetwood's on Front Street in Maui, and he's your radio host. And now, from a race around the sun, Jeremiah Higgins.
Good morning, winner. Take a deep breath. Visualize the mountain of your success and look down at everyone who's ever doubted you. Those losers. Them in their stupid fucking faces.
We're just having fun here before the show.
Absolutely.
On the way into the studio today, Dr.
Here we
D,
go.
Here we go. I don't even know if I should say this out loud because it may jinx it.
But, go ahead.
You know, all the restaurants and the restaurant owners out there, poor restaurant owners and poor people in every industry, but these guys are, men and women of the hospitality industry are really trying to make everything work right now. And driving down every street on the way to the studio today are all these, you know, these built out on the sidewalks into the street.
Call them parklets.
I know they call them parklets. I don't like that one, but like a piglet?
Yeah, well, I don't like podcast either. I call them archives, but I have to make the adjustment. Yeah. So you make the adjustment to parklet.
With tables and plywood and 2x4.
That's right.
That still costs these poor restaurants. I'm looking at some of the...
But some of them look really, really nice.
Some of them do look really nice.
They've done a nice job.
But, I mean,
they're expensive.
$12,000 to $25,000, sure. I'm looking at most of them. But what I'm worried about, and I haven't heard anybody talk about, is that they're out in the street, a lot of these.
Yes.
And I just worry that somebody's going to not pay attention on their phone or something and
if the parklet is out in a street that isn't blocked off, like State Street is, every block from Victoria southward to, I'm guessing, either Cota or Gutierrez or Haley maybe. You know, if they've got them out like they do over here, there's Cadario's. That street's not blocked off. And I come around that corner all the time. And I know it's there. And I swing a little wider.
Yeah.
Not so wide as to go into the other lane of traffic.
Well, let's think about good thoughts. I just hope that never happens.
Everybody, just be careful. Keep your eyes open. Yeah.
All right, Dr. D.
Okay.
Let's get into our show. We have a very, very special guest today. I am...
Yes.
I am in awe of screenwriters. I really am. Emily, I didn't tell you this. Now I tricked you and got you on, and now I'm going to I'm going to just praise you and nerd out, okay, a little bit. But screenwriters,
I love it.
Who doesn't love movies and television? Once upon a time in Hollywood, Dr. D, I worked for the famous Oscar-winning producer Alex Kitman Ho, or A. Kitman Ho, as he's titled on his pictures. I worked in his production office. It was called Miracle Pictures, and the unofficial tagline at Miracle Pictures was, "It will be a miracle if we get this picture made." Alex won an Oscar for Platoon, and in fact, he produced most of Oliver Stone's movies, including Wall Street, Born on the 4th of July. They worked together for many, many years. At that time, I was attending USC Film School with dreams of becoming a movie producer myself after school. Instead, I went into restaurant management, which is so much, so similar. But I read a quote during film school from Oliver Stone where he discussed the screenwriting craft and said that he had written and rewritten Platoon over 10 times. To me, that just seemed like so many times to write, rewrite. I had no clue, right? Yeah. So it just seemed like a lot. I'm sure most Emily can tell us how many times she wrote and rewrote Booksmart. But anyway, so it took him over a decade to get the movie made. And Oliver Stone's advice, which really stuck out to me, was that no matter what role you had in movie making, you should write screenplays to better understand the production, the director, the actors, the whole process. That you should, even if you didn't want to become a screenwriter, you should go through that process. So I ran out and bought Final Draft screenwriting software. And over the next 3 years, I wrote 5 really bad scripts. Don't worry, Emily, I won't send them to you.
Let her rework them.
No, I wouldn't even waste her time. There is a craft to screenwriting, though, unlike any other writing medium. When you live in L.A., like I did for 15 years, you meet a lot of screenwriters mm-hmm. pretty much every day. Everywhere you go, in almost every coffee shop and restaurant and on the bus and wherever you go. At Miracle Pictures, though, my job was not only to get the coffee for Alex when he came in at 11 a.m. and promptly took a nap, but it was to read screenplays. And I couldn't believe this. I was in charge. The stack would be like this when I walked in every day, always 10 screenplays. I had to read them before the lady that I worked directly for, Lori, considered them. So I would read them, write up a little treatment or a summary, and I would vote yes or no. Does this get read by Lori? What I cannot still believe is that they let me, a kid off the street at like, 19 or 20, read the screenplays, write up a summary and say yes or no. And then, of course, you kind of feel like you got some kind of power, like I know what's a good movie, right? So I'll never forget the very first one. I said, no, pass. And it got picked up the very next day. And she was so bummed with me. So,
oh, my God. Do you know what that movie was?
It wasn't The Godfather, was it?
Oh. No, it was not The Godfather. It was Natural Born Killers. No, it was. I don't remember the name of it, but Stephen Baldwin was cast as the lead. So,
I was actually thinking of Dallas Buyers Club.
No, I mean,
Matthew McConaughey.
I don't know. But then it made me really nervous. And I thought, what am I? Don't give this to me. I can't sleep at night. I'm turning down. I'm writing things about these poor screenwriters that, you know, they got on the desk and then I'm shooting them down. Who am I to say? Anyway, my point is that screenwriting is hard. Making it as a screenwriter is even harder. So as I said at the beginning of the show, Emily, I've been fascinated with screenwriters for a long time. I think it's, I don't know if screenwriters get enough credit for what they do and how they craft, you know, the good stories and a comedy like you did with Booksmart is hard to pull off, and it was so good. So today we have the very, very humble but successful screenwriter and producer, one of the best in Hollywood, Emily Halpern. And Emily, you were a guest on the show not too long ago when we did our special on Luke. And I just want to welcome you back to the show. And I want to say happy birthday because I missed happy belated birthday. We were going to celebrate our birthdays together last week, but instead you gave me my birthday off. So thank you.
Well, thank you for putting it that way. And happy belated birthday to you, too. We're both Libras.
Yeah, yeah. I actually got hats to wear, but I have no idea how I thought I would get yours to you.
So. Yeah. Well, anyway, it was the spirit.
Yeah,
but thank you.
I was going to wear both of them on either side of my ear. So Emily Halpern is also...
That was such a nice introduction.
Well, I mean, I could go on and on about you. But you are a very successful and talented producer. I was looking over your credits Some that I didn't even know, like Spartan and Good Girls.
Spartan, I was a David Mamet movie, and I was a production assistant on that. Wow. And I also, as you were talking, like I definitely had some jobs where I was reading scripts and felt like I had more authority than I should have. that whole ecosystem hasn't really changed.
Isn't that funny? How
the same thing.
Well, yeah. I brought it all up because I don't think too many people know about that, how that works, and I think most production offices are like that, aren't they? Where the interns read the scripts and then write up, is it a treatment or did I get, I forget the terminology
now. I believe the synopsis. They are, and I think there's some similar stuff in TV too, where there's not, because there's no really set prerequisite or nothing that like makes you an official arbiter of what a great screenplay is. So I don't know, in some ways it's like, sure, why not show it to a potential audience member, but... You know, also not every movie is going to appeal to every person, so it's an arbitrary system maybe sometimes.
Well, I'm almost happy that the first one that I passed on got picked up right away, because it made me a little more. I really thought about the screenwriter a lot more from their perspective. And what I'm hoping to do today with you, Emily, is that we can talk about the craft. I'm just so interested in it, and I know so many other people are out there as well, the listeners. So let me give a couple. Blackish, you're a co-producer. That's one of my favorite television shows. It's so so smart and so...
Oh, thank you. My writing partner, Sarah, and I were brought on for a year and just loved that experience. And we felt lucky to write for it. It was a great, great show.
Well, I can't let you get past David Mamet. You
were... Yeah, so, yes.
Well, talk about a great writer, great screenwriter. Wow.
No kidding.
Working
that's,
for him.
That's really where I kind of got my foot in the door in the first place, was I got hired to work as his, he had like a full-time assistant, but I was a part-time assistant for him for many years, actually. And so I was a PA on a few of his films. Spartan and State and Maine was the first one. Mm-hmm. Heist. And yeah, just learned so much from being around him. And one thing I learned as a writer, as an aspiring writer, he just wrote all the time. He had, you know, you think of him and you think of his successes but his offices were just filled with scripts. It was a good lesson for me, and like what you're talking about, like it's even for someone of his caliber, he had probably more unproduced scripts than he had produced ones. Like, mm-hmm. It was just about putting in the work all the time, but he set an amazing example. I mean, that's putting it mildly, but... and actually, the very first writing job I got in television was on The Unit, a show that he created, co-created with Sean Ryan and a former member of Delta Force. And it was a military drama. And I always kind of had an interest in comedy writing, so it wasn't it wasn't the funniest show, but it was an amazing, amazing learning experience.
I imagine. Did a person like David Mamet, he's so great with dialogue, and as a writer yourself, your dialogue is really smart and book smart. I was watching it again this morning and just cracking up, and it's so... And I know you had some co-writers on that, but
yeah.
it's smart and it's sharp and it's how do you train the ear? Are you a really good listener? Is that how you become? Do you think a good writer for characters?
I think that's some of it, and I appreciate you saying it. And Katie Silberman, who was the last writer on Booksmart, I think also like did a lot of that honing of the dialogue. But I think. We do it differently now. I do think you kind of become a good listener, and it's really trying to try to write for the way people talk. And I know that it was a few years into our time together as writing partners, my writing partner and Sarah and I, but we also just started like, we'll do readings. We'll read out loud to each other, or if we can, whatever the project is, like have a little mini table read and you hear something read out loud. And mm-hmm. I find that that's really helpful, because hearing it is, you just, a line that you're in love with on the page, you hear it and you're like, oh, that doesn't sound real, or that's not funny. So I think the more, even just hearing it after you've written it is really helpful.
That is a good idea to I can see how that'd be helpful. So let's back up before we get into Booksmart, because I wanted to use Booksmart as to kind of ask my questions about the process of an idea to the page as it travels forward past that intern's desk to the producers, yeah. You know, to raising money, to casting, and all those different things that come and happen in between. I thought we could go through Booksmart and talk about that if we could. But tell me about your beginning. What did you want to be as a young woman, as a little girl? What was your first?
I mean, I always was interested. I mean, when I was little, I went through some phases. I remember I loved music and always wanted to like sing and perform and do something creative. As I sort of grew up and went to college, I was interested in writing, but never really wanted to be in academia, and I didn't see myself as a novelist. And actually, in college, I joined a humor magazine, and from this group, a lot of people went on to become TV writers, and it kind of introduced me. Like, I was a girl from Boston, and my father was a lawyer, and my mom was a teacher. Like, the idea of being a professional TV writer was very foreign to me.
Was this out in LA? Were you already in LA?
No, this was in Boston.
Boston, okay.
But it was like a lot of members of this group went out and established, you know, TV and movie careers, and it just was like, oh, this is an option, and it seemed fun, and it seemed a way to kind of write and be creative, but also make a living, and all of these things were appealing to me. But I had like toyed with the idea of medical school at one point and sort of thought, I'm going to go out to LA, give it a couple of years, and then if I have to, you know, return home with my tail between my legs, I'll do that. But luckily, I haven't had to do that yet. We'll see, though. It's a fickle industry.
It looks like you're well on your way. I think you may be a little entrenched there. I don't think you have to worry. So then, that's interesting. From medical school to writing, did you want to be ever?
Yeah, I mean, I say that
kid?
I was not a serious medical student.
You were just considering.
I think it was one of those like, sure, maybe that'll happen.
Well, one of the projects that you're working on right now is Carol's Second Act. Is that, are you living out any of those dreams through it?
Oh, it's funny. And Carol's Second Act is done. We did our first season, and it's not coming back for a second season. So that one, we had a good time with it. It was great. But yes, we would joke that it was like two things. It was that idea of like the path not taken, like what's the other? And that was a lot of the genesis of the idea, but also, you know, for a lot of the reasons we've talked about, like how long it can take things to get made, Sarah and I and we'll have our moments where we're like, what would we be doing now if we weren't in this industry, right. If we weren't writing? And so that was a lot of what inspired that idea was thinking about, like, if you were reinventing yourself at a late age, what would you be doing? Yeah, maybe it was my way of living out my medical school fantasy.
If now a screenwriter, I mean, I think it's pretty, the term is understood by most people, but basically a screenwriter is what, Emily?
I mean, a screenwriter, I think, is someone who writes, you know, the script for what will become a movie. Mm-hmm. I think just given how much is done on TV right now, even especially now with the pandemic and theaters being closed, that it's like the line is becoming blurred between what's on TV or what's on a platform versus actually being shown in a theater. But because a lot of the work Sarah and I are doing now is in television, and so it's still script writing, but it's just for a different medium. But yes, it's the person who writes the script.
Okay. And a producer, what are the roles of a producer?
Oh yeah, that becomes different in TV. It's very often in TV, producer is also just a writer. It's kind of a fancy term for writer, and a lot of it is sort of dictated by the Writers Guild. But as you move up in the world of TV writing, you become, there are levels. You start off as a staff writer, and that's like the youngest, or not, I don't mean age-wise, but like the first level of writer in a writer's room. And then you become a story editor, executive story editor. Next level is co-producer, and then you're in the world of producer. And so Sarah and I, we created Carol's Second Act, and we were the showrunners, but I think our title was also executive producer. Mm-hmm. But very often in TV, it's just kind of like fancy word for writer. And it really depends on how the show is run. It often means more responsibility, like you could be doing more in editing or you're on set. But I generally found, and there are exceptions, but in TV writers' rooms, it's pretty meritocratic. It's kind of like best idea wins, and some staff writers will also have producerial responsibilities and vice versa. But in a movie, a producer is more often, sometimes the writer can also be a producer and you're on set, and I think that's largely like how the contract is negotiated, but producer often is like who has the money, the person who's backing it. I think producer can mean a few other things, but it's not synonymous with writer the way that it is in TV. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for defining that. I had to remember that from long ago, but I wanted you to clarify because you have so many co-producing or producing titles, but I thought, you know, I was thinking of you as a writer first and I'm glad you clarified that for me. We're talking with Emily Halpern. She wrote Booksmart along with her writing partner, Sarah Haskins. Also, Susanna Fogel was involved as a writer and Katie Silberman. I want to give everybody credit. No, that's very important. And we'll be right back after this break. Stay with us.
I can't soundproof glass.
We have to go to a party tonight.
What?
Nobody knows that we are fun. We didn't party because we wanted to focus on school and get into good colleges.
And it worked.
But the irresponsible people who partied also got into those colleges.
I'm incredible at hand jobs, but I also got a 1560 on the SATs.
We haven't done anything. We haven't broken any rules.
Name one person whose life was so much better because they broke a couple of rules.
Picasso.
He broke art rules.
Rosa Parks.
Name another
Susan
one.
Susan B. Anthony.
God.
Picture this. I'm a bag of put me to your lips.
Hand sanitizer.
Check.
Chapstick.
Check.
Mace. Listen, it is very important that you keep the safe.
Oh! Ah!
Don't touch your eyes!
Tonight is your night.
Yes!
My name's Danny Trejo, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. And on it, I'm talking about my cookbook. It's awesome. Hey, I got a documentary coming out and dropped a record called Satisfy My Soul. Check it out. Trejo's music. Jeremiah, you're loved, Holmes.
Soundproof glass.
We have to go to a party tonight.
What?
Nobody knows that we are fun. We didn't party because we wanted to focus on school and get into good colleges.
And it worked.
But the irresponsible people who partied also got into those colleges.
I'm incredible at hand jobs, but I also got a 1560 on the SATs.
We haven't done anything. We haven't broken any rules.
Name one person whose life was so much better because they broke a couple of rules.
Picasso.
He broke art rules.
Rosa Parks.
Name another
Susan
one.
Susan B. Anthony.
God.
Picture this. I'm a bag of put me to your lips.
Hand sanitizer.
Check.
Chapstick.
Check.
Mace. Listen, it is very important that you keep the safe.
Oh! Ah!
The safety on! Don't touch your eyes!
Tonight is your night.
Yes!
Emily Halpern is an executive producer. She is a writer, and she wrote Booksmart, which was the directorial debut of Olivia Wilde. And this is me saying this, not anybody else, so don't get mad at Emily, but it's this generation's Fast Times at Ridgemont High. To me, it feels like that kind of a movie, like the high school experience, and a real, pretty realistic one, right? The dialogue's really... how kids talk, and how did you capture that being out of high school a few years? And
so the Booksmart process, I mean, I really do have to give Katie Silberman the credit as far as like the final, she was the final writer on the script and really did like nail a lot of that dialogue, and she did a fantastic job. But the process was kind of exactly what you were talking about. Sarah and I came up with the concept for Booksmart and wrote the first draft in the first many drafts, actually, in 2008, 2009, I would have to double check, but the journey of Booksmart was a 10, 11 year journey.
So how do you, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but how do you, when you both wrote this, you and your co-writer, partner, how does that work when you come up with the ideas? Tell us how, you know, what you do and how you put that together and how you pitch that.
The funny thing is Sarah and I had known each other. We had been friends and she was living out in Chicago and she moved to LA and we've now been writing partners for 10 years, but we at the time, we just met for a dinner in 2009 or 2008. And I was writing, I believe at the time, for a Shonda Rhimes show called Private Practice. Mm-hmm. And Sarah was working on for Current TV, doing like a sketch comedy show. And it was over dinner that we were talking about how we each wanted to write a movie and had sort of similar ideas for a movie set in high school, but with the protagonists being women as opposed to men. Because it felt like we'd seen so many movies where it was with a similar premise, which was that it's always about the guys and it's always like the goal is always the same, which is to get laid. Mm-hmm. And like for women, that's not the goal in high school. It's like the goal, and certainly not for girls like us who were kind of the nerdy girls in high school. The goal is like to get a boyfriend, to hold hands with someone in the hallway. But we wanted to write something from the perspective of, the girls in high school. And yes, we
so are the characters based on you and your writing partner?
I would say very loosely, but we definitely had some real firsthand experience on being nerds in high school, so that helped. But we teamed up to write that movie. Honestly, partly because we had sort of a similar idea for it, but also just for accountability. Like I was working a full-time job that was demanding and so was she. And we knew like the only way we would ever get it done was if we had someone else to be accountable for and towards. And so we would meet up nights after work and on weekends and things that like at this stage in my life seem impossible. Yeah, we had a lot of fun writing it, but it was actually the first thing we ever wrote together. And it was, just thinking about it now, we've been partners long enough that we've developed a rhythm writing together. But I think our first draft of Booksmart was like 160 pages or something. Because, I mean, for context, a comedy script should be like 110, like at most.
Yeah.
We were still in that stage of our relationship where neither wanted to hurt the other one's feelings, so we would sort of like politely just agree with whatever the other person said, so we never said no to anything, so the script was so long because it had every single idea that we pitched in it. It was a good process for us, and we wound up feeling like we were compatible together. And eventually did mold it into we certainly went through a few drafts just the two of us before we felt like we had something we were happy with. And then because we were both working, we had agents who we could show the script to. And you know, mine was a TV agent, but we were lucky in that our representation like responded to it and felt that it was, that maybe we had found like a little, a new voice kind of.
Yeah.
Like that it did feel like there was a little bit of a space to fill in that genre. I think it was the first place we sold it to was a studio called Fox Atomic, a small studio. And for us, we'd never written, never sold a screenplay. This was amazing. It was like such an amazing feeling to find out that our screenplay had just sold. And I'm not, it sounds like it's a joke, but what actually happened was like that happened on a Friday. And then over the weekend, there was like in one of the Hollywood trades, a news report that Fox Atomic had gone under. So it didn't exist anymore. Like 2 days after we sold it.
That's such a Hollywood story, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I'm pretty sure if I'm remembering correctly, it was Sarah's mom who sent her the article that was like, isn't this the place just sold your movie?
Yippee, and then it was back to selling it.
No, it was crazy. And it had a long journey. And then it wound up finding a home at, it was called Handsome Charlie, which was Natalie Portman's shingle that she had for a little while. And then It just had, yeah, it was like a long, I keep using the word long journey, but eventually it...
Since 2008, you said, right? That you came up with the idea, and then, and when did you finish the script and get it out there?
It's a good, I think we probably spent a little under a year writing it ourselves. Okay. So sometime in like 2009, and it was, it got put on the blacklist, and definitely was like good for, it put me and Sarah on the map. In a way, and kind of started our careers as screenwriters, I think.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can't get a script out there if you don't have an agent, right? I mean, most production offices won't take a script unless there's an agent that the writer has an agent attached, or is that not a thing anymore, or was it ever?
You know, I'm honestly not sure. I think it's probably true. I do think it's hard without an agent, mm-hmm. but it kind of depends on like whose hands you can get your script into. But right. that may be true. It's one of those tricky, like it's a catch 22. Like you can't,
right. can't get it out there if you don't. Well, you got to get to an
have
agent.
An agent, and right. You can't get an agent until you've done.
I think it was interesting that you mentioned that comedies are typically 90 minutes to 110, right?
And that you know, there's always exceptions to the rule, but
right.
That's the,
but there is that format that we as movie lovers or watchers, or as an audience, we start to almost know that format instinctively, mm-hmm. without, and then we're just a movie will disappoint us if it goes too far, and it's a, you know what I mean, or if it's if it breaks those, you know, three, I'm forgetting all the terms now. I should go back to school. But basically follow the line of a script or a movie the way it plays out, the three acts and
completely.
Resolution
and it's
amount of minutes.
Sorry.
No, I'm just.
No, and it's funny, and it's like having been through it, and we've written a lot of screenplays, and I'm sure some of them not very good, but it's really hard when you're writing to cut your own. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's that expression, you know, like killing your darlings, but it's. I've often been in a position where it's like, this should technically be a little shorter, but like this is clearly worth an extra 10
I love
minutes
this. I'm so
yeah. But then
I'm such
when
a
you're
great
like
writer.
Exactly. But when you're in like it's the thing as a whole, when you're the audience member and you're enjoying a movie but you feel like you get bored at a certain time. Like it's easier said than done when you're the one writing it. But
it's a tough craft. It really is.
I
Do you still think it's a tough craft, or do you think?
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
I still, every project, whether it's something I'm doing on my own or with Sarah, it's like the blank. Actually, one of my first bosses, Sean Ryan on the unit, used to say like there's nothing harder than the blank page. Like when you're a writer, and that's probably not how he says, but I feel that way every single time I sit down to write something, I feel like I can't do it and I don't know what I'm doing. Like, and it never, I think if I've matured at all in my writing career, it just means like I've accepted that that's true every time, and I'm not trying to make it not true anymore.
We're talking with Emily Halpern. She's an executive producer and writer. I got marbles in the mouth today, Richard. Emily Halpern, we'll be right back.
Trials are today. I want to be ready.
Lock down that point guard spot.
There's no point guards in field hockey, Dad.
Field hockey? My name is Andre Johnson. I have a great career, a spectacular house, and a loving family I'm surrounded by every day.
Hey, Pops.
Son, can I just please get a little coffee in me before you start this morning?
But as a black man with all this success, sometimes I feel like an oddity.
If you look to your left, you'll see the mythical and majestic black family.
Lately, I feel in order to make it, we've all dropped a little of our culture.
All right, stop, Andy.
Sup?
Andy? That's not even close to Andre.
I think it says I'm edgy but approachable.
I think it says I hate my father and I play field hockey.
Yeah.
I mean, you look different, but you haven't changed. Funny to think how the time gets away. Funny how you take me right back again. Stole me away. First time I saw you, you did me that way. What should I say? I saw you laughing, but I was afraid that I'd get in the way. I did not think I would see you again. So how have you been? You remember everything. Funny, I think how the time gets away. Funny how you take me right back again. Stole me away.
Hey, it's Tim Stack here, and I just did the Jeremiah Show and had a really, really great time. Check me out at TV's Tim Stack on Twitter.
Job over here.
Listen up. I'm going to need my family to be black. Not black-ish.
Daddy's scaring me.
Why don't we take a black break and go get some white yogurt?
Yeah!
Hey, hold on. Hold on. Slow your roll, you two. Junior, when you turn 13, I'm throwing you an African rites of passage ceremony. Stand right there and experience your roots.
You better off watching Roots.
Welcome back to the Jeremiah Show. We are with writer and executive producer Emily Halpern. Welcome back, Emily. We're talking, I'm nerding out. I told you I was going to. This is more of me just being so interested in what you do that in an interview probably. But Dr. D, I do have a trivia question for you because I know you love trivia.
Yes, yes. As long as it has to do with Adele.
What Richard's banned from talking Adele anymore on the show. I've banned you. Adele is so talented and great. My trivia question for you is when you're watching a movie, what is one page translate to in movie time when you're watching a movie?
Well, if it was the movie with Robert Redford in a sailboat out in the ocean, it would be the entire film.
Oh, yeah. That
because
was,
he didn't say a freaking word throughout. I would say on average, I would say probably, maybe 5 minutes.
So what? So one
page
would
be
5 minutes?
I would say 5 minutes.
Emily, what is the correct answer?
I think it's a minute.
Yeah, right? 1 minute.
Oh, my Lord.
These are little fun facts I love. I love
that. Well, my actors read slow. I want them to slow down, relax.
5 minutes.
Take a little Valium.
They're really
very slow. But you are right. Like, if it's just a page of stage directions, that's going to play differently than a page of dialogue.
I have to tell you that another film that also would have very few pages of dialogue was the movie Mine, which I recommended to someone, where the guy's standing on what he thinks is an explosive mine, and if he moves, he's gone.
Or the movie where a guy's in a box.
Or the guy, I mean, no, seriously, but you see these, obviously before talkies. Oh, boy. There was no script. See, I love bringing nostalgia in. Yeah. Not so much from my era, but slightly before.
Well, I'm glad. I'm so happy to know that you're at least up there with Adele now. So you're moving into the present day.
I'm just barely across the 21st century line.
Yes. Emily Halpern, executive producer. Yes. She's the writer of Booksmart. And we're taking the journey with you right now on Booksmart and how it got made. And when we left off last, Emily, before the break, you had the idea with your writing partner, Sarah Haskins, and then you got it sold. The company went out of business over the weekend.
Yes, that's right.
you're back on the streets. You sold it to Natalie Portman's umbrella company, and then where did it go from there?
So then it was there for a little bit, and I should say also, like, at each stage, like at her company, Handsome Charlie, there were a few drafts. So what you were talking about at the beginning of the show, it's like this was a roughly 8-year process for us, and so many drafts of Booksmart. Like I don't know how many, but we would write one for at least a couple for each company.
Everybody had notes for you at each company.
Yeah, and just through part of, like, you're developing it now with these people. So right. Yes, it'd be shaping it in different ways.
Did they option the screenplay, or do they, which they, that ties it up for about 3 years, right?
Two or three years.
So they give you a percentage of it, and they hold, and they have the rights to it. And if they don't make it, they pass on it, and it goes back out.
Exactly.
So it started in 2008. You finished the first draft that was sold in 2009 or somewhere about there. So now what, so that's still a long journey it takes to get that. To get it made.
Oh, definitely.
Right?
And I will actually say it was somewhere in there. And Sarah and I, we've been lucky, and we have written, we've had, as opposed to on spec, like we've been paid to write several screenplays, like, which are now in development. You know, we wrote a script for Universal called Lunch Lady that's still in development that we wrote 11 years ago or something. But it's, you start to understand how you can be a gainfully employed screenwriter and never have a movie actually come out. Like you understand. Like I actually, when I first moved out to LA and was just kind of looking for work, a friend introduced me to a screenwriter friend who would give me advice and just talk to me about the industry. And I looked him up, and he had tons and tons of credits and lived in a nice house, and I'd never seen a movie that he'd written. And I didn't get how that could happen. And then through the Booksmart experience, I came to better understand how that could happen. So I will say somewhere in the middle, Sarah and I also kind of, it started moving into the television space, which we've liked a lot also because there's still plenty of rejection in TV, but you really do get a firm yes or a firm no, and there's something nice about that as well sometimes.
Right, just that it's not going on for years and years and years. Yep. I mean, even if a movie is greenlit and the script is optioned, the cast is put together, it's probably a year, right, or so?
It's
3 months, 3 months, 3 months, 3 months pre or more, 6 months?
Definitely.
And then... And then released.
Process.
So a lot of times. So how long? Once, when? How did it get to Olivia Wilde, and how did it become her directorial debut? Well, and by the way, congratulations! That's really great. That cast is amazing.
Oh, thank you. I'll tell you. So after Handsome Charlie, it went to Annapurna, and it was like, you know, Megan Ellison's company, and that's who eventually produced it. And first Sarah and I were the writers there at Annapurna, and we did a few drafts for them. And then this was like roughly eight years into our tenure with Booksmart. And then after we'd done our second or third draft with them, they brought on Susanna Fogel, who you mentioned, and she's actually a friend. You know, it's like it winds up being a small community, and she's a talented writer-director. And she was brought on to do a pass of the script and direct it, and we were a little bit involved at that point. But what's interesting to your point is there was a moment at which I think, if I'm remembering correctly, Booksmart was going to come together with that package, but because of, you know, just so many things can happen. Like you said, you have a shooting schedule, and things can fall apart for any number of reasons. And I'm honestly not totally sure what the complications were in that situation, but after Susanna's tenure, she also did like a tremendous amount of work that ultimately contributed to like the final product of Booksmart. But then it went to Katie Silberman, and it was Annapurna who brought in Olivia Wilde. And Sarah and I were out of the process at that point. Like we'd finished our passes on it. And then it was sort of that final package that like took it through the finish line and came out with the movie that you saw. But I will say that this is not like movies can get made in a lot of different ways, and this is not a unique story, and that very often a movie will go through a number of different writers or directors until it reaches the screen. But I think we feel so lucky that like every additional every ad was like additive, you know, it's like the quality improved and the quality kept improving and it kept growing. And the final product was something we were so happy with. We felt like it really retained the original idea, the feel we had for Booksmart. And I feel like very often the story is like, I wrote this screenplay and it was so great. And then someone got hired and then it got turned into this thing I'm ashamed of and I hate. And like, I want my name off of it. And we had the absolute opposite experience.
What's the name that the directors will use when they're not proud of it?
Right. I feel like everyone has their different alibis.
Yeah. So how does that feel? That's my next question. And then I got to take a break. Richard's waving at me. He wants more trivia questions. How does that feel at that 2008? You have this idea with your writing partner. Now you're 2019 and you're going to the premiere and taking your family, I'm sure. And then you've got these great, Caitlin, is it Deaver? I love her as an actress, but I've never said her name out loud.
Amazing.
I love Caitlin.
Amazing.
Beanie Feldstein, she is hilarious. Yeah. Jessica Williams, Jason Sudeikis, Lisa Kudrow. I mean, what an amazing cast. And they're all bringing your story that you came up with to life and saying your dialogue is coming out of their mouth. What's that like?
It was honestly amazing. And we couldn't have asked for a better cast or a better, reception for the film. And we were so proud of the final product and so grateful to everyone who had sort of shaped it along the way and turned it into what it was. I feel like very, very appreciative for what was ultimately like a really satisfying experience for me and Sarah. And it was the very first thing we wrote together. So it really was like the end of a long journey for us. And it felt great. It's just, we were delighted.
Well, you've been involved in so many great TV shows and projects, and you've written a lot of dialogue and created a lot of scenes and all that. But did it feel just as special? Is it always as special when you watch what you've created, what you put on paper come to life?
I think Booksmart felt special because it was because it did kind of start us on this path. Like there was like a personal satisfaction that came from it. I think also after our years, and nothing teaches you to be collaborative like TV. It's just like nobody does anything alone in TV. Most scripts have 10 people writing them, and obviously with the crew and the cast, it's like it's such a group effort that it's I think it's helped us a lot. And as far as the from where Booksmart started to where it ended up, we just kind of couldn't feel luckier. And it was like, it was just on a personal level, really a nice experience for us.
Okay, we got to take a break. I promise, Richard. But before we do, if you could just tell me quickly, what do you do when you finish a script or you finish something you're proud of? Is there an Emily celebration, something you do? Like you crack a bottle
of... Oh my gosh.
Wine?
Gosh, no, I don't. I should have a specific tradition. I mean, this is the most boring answer, but like, I probably go take a nap.
Actually, I love that answer. That's a perfect answer. We'll be right back with more from a writer, an executive producer on many projects, and co-producer and producer, and the list goes on. Emily Halpern from she wrote Booksmart. You gotta go watch it. We're gonna play a clip from Blackish right now.
It's not that big of a deal.
All this coming from a mixed woman who technically isn't even really black?
If I'm not really black, then could somebody please tell my hair and my ass? This is what you always wanted.
To successfully raise our family in a better situation than we had.
I really screwed this up, didn't I?
Screwing things up's just another part of what it means to be a father. It's how you learn to fix things.
The trees are looking like bones. And the afternoon filled with storm and rain. And I'm sitting here in this metal train. I'm thinking of you. Now the trees are looking like bones, and the afternoon filled with rain and storm, and I'm tangled up in memories, phones no way through. And time no good, I said wisdom no good. It's no good to me anymore.
Hi, I'm Brooke Williamson, Top Chef season 14 winner, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show, so don't go away.
You're listening to The Jeremiah Show with Dr. D. Find all of our past shows on iTunes, podcasts, The Jeremiah Show.
Out of the corner of my eye, caught you walk by. I chase you down. Is it okay if I call you mine from here on out? As if I could ever stop. You are light as a butterfly, as heavy as a rock, bottom and the top. Is it okay if I call you mine from here on out? As if I could ever stop.
Patricia Heaton stars in Carol's second act, CBS this fall.
Internal medicine? I hope I'm not late.
Nope, still waiting on the chief resident. You're lucky. Rumor has it she's a real ball buster.
Hello, everyone. You must be the internal medicine residents.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm Carol Kenny, and I waited a long time for this day.
To be chief resident?
Me? No. I'm an intern, just like you.
But you're...
older. Yes, I know.
So why med school?
My marriage fell apart. My husband went off to find himself, and now he's sleeping on his sister's futon, and I'm a doctor, so life is good.
To The Jeremiah Show, we're talking with writer Emily Halpern. Emily, really fun to kind of take that journey on Booksmart with you and how that all went. How did you get involved in Black-ish? Just through your reputation?
Well, we were under a deal at ABC Studios at the time, and we had created the TV show Trophy Wife that had been on for a year, and that was a great experience for us. We loved it. We had a great cast and a great group of writers, and it only went one season. And we would have loved to do more, but that ultimately wasn't up to us. But we had done that for ABC, so I think we were sort of known in that community and under our deal. And I forget exactly, but it was like being under a deal. It's you'll get asked to write on different shows that ABC has, and sometimes they're new pilots, and sometimes they're existing shows. And in this case, it was on an existing show, and Black-ish already was like a hit and such a well-regarded show, and so we were excited to go beyond it. We also just socially knew a number of the writers already, so it just worked out great. It was a really fun year for us. We loved writing for the show. By that point, it was kind of a well-oiled machine, like, you know, between, you know, Kenya and Jonathan Groff and Corey Nickerson. It was just it was really well run and just really fun to be a part of.
It really is true, isn't it, that Hollywood is almost like a high school where it's,
yes. Yes,
it's a clique,
it is.
And you really, once you get, you're in there and you know all the people, you work with them. If they're good, that you continue to work with them for years.
I do feel like trying to break in, it feels like this impenetrable, kind of unknowable world. And then once you're working it, it feels like an incredibly small community. Like I'm constantly working with and seeing the same people. And and we kind of joked a little bit when we were at ABC there. There's like one building where all the writers under deals are given their offices. So it did feel a little bit like a dorm, and you're just like going to the bathroom and you'll run into different writer friends.
You got Top Ramen in the cupboards.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully the food's a little bit better at ABC.
You'd hope, but it's not always.
I didn't expect you to answer that. You don't have to get it.
Yeah.
No comment. I read today that LA and LA production is back. You know, that people are working again, that the reality TV shows are really doing well because they require smaller production crews and it's easier to stick to the guidelines, the health guidelines and all that. But it's off 55% from the same time last year. Are you feeling that? Tell me what happened. Everybody's been affected, obviously, by the pandemic, but how were you affected and screenwriters and producers, your world?
Certainly feeling it, and I can't complain. I think we're in a really fortunate position in that we're working. I think it's really hard for so many people right now, but feeling it even in, like, I'm, you know, sitting here talking to you in my, not quite my pajamas. I did a little better, but I've been in quarantine like everybody else, and Sarah and I have been working like over Zoom, and we have a feature project we're working on right now that, again, like they were hoping to shoot it before now, but obviously, you know, things have, it can't be in production right now, but I feel lucky in that, like, we are actively writing, we have some shows in development, we have this feature, but we can do it from home. I know, you know, obviously Carol's second act didn't continue, but for friends whose like shows were renewed, they're back up. And I've heard of like a handful of people who are starting to go back at this point, and then some shows still haven't. And I know of some shows that were canceled already just because the logistics of them going back was tricky. So I know I'm very much feeling it. I think it feels like places are starting to be up and running, but it's nowhere near where it used to be.
What will this do for the television shows that we love, or for films that were in production? How far back does this set us from new content? Do you know?
You know, it's a really good idea? Question. I have a friend who's a director, and she went back and just finished a movie she was directing. And then other people, I think some movies might not. I feel like it's kind of becoming a case-by-case thing. I know in the TV world, like, a lot of pilots had been picked up and then weren't shot just because of the timing of it. And now, in at least in network TV, this is sort of the development season where you're pitching and they're buying. So there just becomes this question, like, there will be the new pilots that were pitched this year and then the pilots last year that were never shot. And like, it's an open question. I don't know how they'll choose to address that, or will they make all of them, or will some, you know, some decisions are going to have to be made, and I'm definitely not the one making them.
Well, it's such an interesting time and a problem to have, because I can't say, but this is, we're all home a lot. We're all looking for escape and entertainment. We're looking for something, you know, I'm looking for stuff to make me feel good and laugh and be, you know, and then, and there's a lot of content out there, but if you're like me and you've watched everything on Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, HBO Max, this is the time that we need you most, you know, and the world needs, you know, writers and artists to, you know, it's a unique time. Who would know that this was going to be the case? But it's, I definitely appreciate what you do and your, you know, the in Hollywood, what you guys put out is the entertainment to keep us sane.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you. And I agree. I think it's, just in the sense that like, I'm in the same boat. Like I've been deliberately holding off on that last season of Great British Baking Show. Cause afterwards I don't know what I'm going to watch. but no, there, I do feel confident that there is always an appetite for entertainment and it's tough right now, but I don't know what recovery is going to look like, but I appreciate what you said.
Yeah, that's the old saying right now. Well, I've watched all of Netflix. Now what do I do?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, would probably be impossible, but I feel like I've watched it all.
It feels like it. We're into the British productions, movies.
At the Dugan House?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And what I like, I don't know about you, I get bored after a season or two of a particular program these days. Now, mm-hmm. I could watch the entire series of Cheers or Friends or those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But I get bored with programs like The Walking Dead, Lost, mm-hmm. things of this mm-hmm. nature. It's like, I'm sorry, writers, do you not know how to end this? Because this is getting boring. Or some of these series.
Guess we won't get those writers on the show.
It's like.
I was just thinking, I'm glad I don't know any of those writers.
I'm sorry.
But what about that? A movie is one thing. You have a beginning, a middle, and an end. But in a TV series, and I tell you what's really dumb is at the end, you know that this series, like the series Blacklist, all right?
Yeah.
It's a continuation. They will draw from the previous episodes into the next and so on, right? And then they'll put at the end of a particular episode, to be continued. Duh! I mean, I just find some of those things.
So this is your audience. You got
yeah.
how?
Yeah, right.
It's like you can never just turn off the comments.
There you go.
The comment section of the radio show right now.
But I just think sometimes that they
was that just a statement or did
it
you?
It could be the production staff that's doing this because see, I do video editing now, so I could put that in. The writers
maybe
would never
just
know.
Having fun, Dr. D.
I
like
am
the
just,
old.
That's right.
Old movies where they said you had to come back the next week.
That's
you remember
right.
that? You
come
remember
back
those days,
next
don't
week
you?
For the continuing saga of Old Spicer. And so his Wonder Horse Billy.
Let me see if I can get back on track.
There you go. Good luck with that.
Do you write? I meant to ask this question earlier, so it's out of context now. But still, I still want to know. Do you write with characters in mind? I guess you do mainly because you're already on the television show and you know the character. Or did you have somebody in mind when you were writing Booksmart?
Oh, that's interesting. I do find it helpful to have some type or person or actor in mind. And it, like in the case of Booksmart, I think it wasn't a one-to-one on me and Sarah, but like we knew the type. So I think we had a pretty good sense of who those characters were in our brains. It wasn't a particular actress. But I know, like for a TV pitch that we just went out with, it's about two sisters, and we did kind of have two actresses in mind who we know who likely will not be available, but it helps with what you were asking about earlier, actually, like dialogue. It just, I find it helpful because it's like, what would this person say? And it does help me to have either a person or a type in mind.
When you were talking, I was smiling there. I thought back to the scene, Caitlin and Beanie, I forget their character names, I'm sorry, but she's in the car and she walks out and she's just dancing and then she says, are we going to go to school or what?
Yeah.
It's a cute scene. Okay, I'm going to let you go because I know you've got some heavy writing to do
there
today.
See if she'll write a screenplay for this show.
Just a warning, no to be continued though.
I was just going to say,
Dr. D
yeah.
hates that.
Let each show stand alone.
He's your demographic too, by the way, right?
I think you should end the video portion of this episode with a to be continued.
There you go.
Let's do that. That's a good idea. We'll do that. Okay, I do have one last question. What are you working on now? Can you tell us or...
I mean, I could tell you, it's funny because the timing, like it is like we're out there kind of pitching now. We did pitch the show about Sister. We're under a deal. Sarah and I are under a deal at CBS this year. So we just pitched a show about sisters that it's going to be bought and it currently is being negotiated. So we don't know where that's going to wind up, but that's a comedy.
Do you guys write powerful or strong women? Are you writing more? Are you writing a lot of roles with women lead characters in mind?
Yeah.
I like that, by the way.
I do think, like with Booksmart and Carol Second Act and Trophy Wife, we do. We tend to write, you know, female characters, strong female characters, both because it's like what we know and what we care about. So we've really enjoyed doing that. And then we're about to take another pitch out with two other writers and that's another multi-cam comedy about a family. And then the movie project that we're working on right now is it's based on a true story about four elderly women who go to the Super Bowl.
I like that.
That's been a lot of fun.
Do you have a working title or no?
The working title is 80 for Brady.
I like it too.
That's great.
And that title was brought to us, and it's based on loosely based on a true story. And we kind of, our take on it was like like a hangover version of it. Like these four old ladies go to the Super Bowl and have an adventure. But so we're about to turn in our second draft. Again, it's like so early and who knows what's going to happen. Yeah.
In 10 years, we'll have you back to pitch it.
Or to promote it. That's exactly right. it's been a lot of fun. And no, like I said, like particularly given right now, like we feel very lucky to be working and to be able to do it from home.
Well, you're a great writer, and keep giving us good content.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sorry, I keep saying my last question. But in the business with Netflix and all these Amazon, Apple, everybody's jumping in the production business and putting out their own content, Disney Channel and all that. Is that good for the business? Is it more work for writers and less pay, or is it great pay and same amount of work, or what do you wanted to talk to somebody in the industry about that. I'm curious.
It's interesting, and it's hard for me to say for sure, and Sarah and I have spent a lot of our time in TV in network. I guess I feel, or my hope maybe, is that just more platforms means more content, means more jobs for writers. Yeah. You know, I do hope that that's the case.
So it's good overall.
It feels like it does create more opportunities for different voices to emerge, for people to have opportunities to create material on different platforms.
Emily Halpern, so great to have you on.
And this was great. Thank you so much.
I got to have you on next year for our birthday again.
Oh, yeah. We'll get it even closer to our birthdays.
Okay. And I'll send you a hat ahead of time and some cake. Thank you so much, Emily Halpern. Go check out. What are you going to do tonight? You're going to go home and you're going to watch Booksmart, right, Dr. D?
That's right. You got it.
Or any of Emily's shows. Communicate more, listen, and evolve. Everybody have a great week.
I drink good coffee every morning. Comes from a place that's far away. When I'm done, I feel like talking without you. Don't want you thinking I'm unhappy. What is closer to the truth? That if I lived till I was 102, I just don't
This is comedian Mads Jobrani, and you are listening to The Jeremiah Show on AM 1290 KZSB Santa Barbara. Listen, man.
Do you need help with your restaurant or hospitality business? See how we can help your business at hjlrestaurantadvisors.com. Check out our website at thejeremiahshow.com. We are on iTunes and SoundCloud. Please subscribe on iTunes, podcast The Jeremiah Show. Did you like our soundtrack? Find all of our soundtracks on Spotify, The Jeremiah Show. As always, a big thanks to Dr. D for making our voices come alive on the airwaves, and to our station manager, Les Carroll, for letting us on the airwaves at all. Be sure to check out our very own Richard Dr. D. Dugan's Peabody Award-nominated radio show, Tell Me Your Story, every Sunday at 7 a.m. and again at 7 p.m. Thank you for listening to The Jeremiah Show with Dr. D. Listeners, we appreciate you and want to hear from you. Please send us your ideas at ShowJeremiah on Twitter and Instagram. The Jeremiah Show is produced by executive producer Jeremiah Higgins and sound engineer Richard Dr. D. Dugan. Have a great rest of your week, everyone. Evolve.
Red and yellow and on fire, and the clouds would catch the colors of red and yellow and on fire.
They were beautiful, the most beautiful sky in the night.
On fire, and the clouds would catch the colors.